It's 6:01, so I think we can go ahead and get started.
Sounds good.
Okay, welcome everybody to the first episode of the Quill and Query podcast. This is an indie publishing and writing podcast. I am Brandon Hall, joined by, do you want to go by Ash or Amaycock? I'm sorry.
I'll go by Ash. Professionally, it's Amaycock, but okay. Everyone just calls. That's normal. Yeah.
Okay. Well, why don't you go first and tell everyone a little bit about who you are and what you do on TikTok?
Cool. Well, hey, everybody. This is super exciting. I'm stoked to be here. This is just such a good idea, in my opinion, which is why I wanted to get involved. I've been on TikTok for a few years, as I'm sure everyone else has. I've been a writer my whole life. I do book reviews and stupid book related stuff that, you know, everyone else does as well. So I'm currently in the middle of writing my first dark fantasy novel called A Filthy Hunger. I'm also working on an anthology story with Brandon for his anthology. It isn't titled yet. We'll get there though. That's a very quick synopsis. Glad to be here. Ask questions if you want. I think it's pretty informal, so.
Yeah, we're just going to figure it out as we go, but I will try to follow your intro with something just as good. So my name is Brandon Hall. I've been on TikTok for just shy of a year. Like Ash, I just like to post book reviews. I do a lot of stupid book and writing memes, which do really well for some reason. I'm currently working on my debut fantasy novel as well, which is a dark fantasy murder mystery called A Knight of Knives. And then also, like Ash said, we're working together with a team of really talented indie authors on the Blazed for Hire anthology. Hoping, fingers crossed, to have that out in the summer, but we'll see. My story is also untitled. I have like three titles I'm bouncing back and forth between right now. But
You'll have to share those eventually.
Yeah, I will. But yeah, that's all I can think of about me. I don't consider myself the most interesting person in the world, so. Oh, we have a special guest.
Yes, yeah, special guest Mira will make her appearance every now and then and probably cry at some point, but we'll just ignore her.
Awesome. She will definitely need her own spotlight episode one of these.
Yeah, there we weeks. Go. What are you reading? Yeah.
All right, well, hopefully we have a good show for you guys today. We're going to talk about some industry news. We've got Audible royalty rates, potential TikTok ban, and how that affects BookTok marketing, some information about Amazon's policy regarding ARC reviews, and then we're going to talk about some writing topics like inspiration and imposter syndrome and things like that. I figured those would be good topics for a first episode because, you know, those are the kind of questions I always get asked, or I ask first to anyone who's like a fellow creative or writer. So I figured that was a good place to start. But before we get into that, Ash, what are you currently reading?
Well, I'm currently in the middle of The Fragile Threads of Power by V.E. Schwab. It's the first book of her second series of the Shades of Magic series. Really liking it so far. I'm also almost done with The Prisoner's Throne by Holly Black, also a follow-up book from a series that she has. And some ARC reviews, but keep those under the belt. Very what about cool. you, Brandon?
I'm currently trying to make my way through the First Law trilogy for, I think, what's the third time now? I get progressively further each time, and it's not because I don't like it. I love it. I just have really bad ADHD, so
there you go.
I get easily distracted. I put it down, and then I'm like, I'm going to start over. But yeah, and I have some ARC copies that I'm reading as well. I don't know if I should share what those are yet. You'll see when the reviews come out. But on your reads, those are two authors that are like on my TBR and have been for a while, but I just haven't gotten to them. I have Addie LaRue and some of the Shades of Magic books, but I haven't gotten to them yet. And Holly Black, I know her name, I just can't connect it to what she's written. So what is she best known for? Because I know if you'd say it, I'm going to be like, oh yeah, that's...
Yeah, so, well, before I tell you that, I will say if you're going to do V.E. Schwab, go Shades of Magic first. V.E. Schwab is one of my favorite authors ever, and I couldn't stand The Invisible Life of Addie LaRue.
Oh, okay.
So I would say go for the fantasy first before like the soft romance fantasy. But Holly Black is best known for currently her Folk of the Air series, which is The Cruel Prince. She also back in the early 2000s did what The Cruel Prince eventually offshooted from, which was like these really cool urban fantasies, very similar like the Fae and the Folk, but in cities, which is really cool. So it's definitely YA, like older YA, not necessarily adult like we're used to. Did you really? So jealous. And Spiderwick Chronicles. Yes, that's right. Which is now a Roku TV series. Thank you, AV. That was a really good reminder.
Yes, yeah, all of those I've heard of. So I know where her name comes from now.
There you go. It's my bread and butter. She's also a fave.
I also have heard that people that like V.E. Schwab are kind of mixed on Addie LaRue. Like, that seems to be a common sentiment. So maybe I will just go back to Shades of Magic first and then...
Yeah. That would be my suggestion.
Okay.
I've also never... sorry, I, like, forgot what you said. I've never even heard the First Law trilogy. Is it, like, Brandon Sanderson-esque? Like, high or complicated?
I would say it's... You're familiar with, are you familiar with Joe Abercrombie at all, or?
No, never heard.
What about, I'm sure you know who he is, but have you read George R.R. Martin?
I have, unfortunately.
You and I are probably of very differing opinions on him, but, so, okay, you might not like Joe Abercrombie then if you don't like George R.R. Martin, so maybe that is not a good recommendation for you.
No, I have my pet peeves with G.R. Martin. I think the crux of my issue is just there's a lot of unnecessary background information that kind of gets thrown in my opinion, for very little purpose. Mm-hmm. Makes it harder to get through. But I've read all of his stuff, so yeah. I'm not like not. I just also finish, please. Same feelings about a Patrick Rothfuss, mm-hmm. A Wise Man's Fear. Just finish your series before you jump into something else. But anyway, that's another tangent.
Yeah. AV, this is just a pure guilty pleasure of mine, but I love his food descriptions. He could give me a whole book of just those and I would eat it up. But I understand the criticism, so.
Yeah. Need like a cookbook by G.R.R. Martin where it's just like one whole thing. Cool.
Okay, well that's what we're reading. Looks like, sorry guys, I have a document that I'm trying to go through, but it's being a little difficult with me. Okay, before we get into indie publishing news, we have some independent releases to spotlight. So we were originally going to do this first episode on the 19th. Unfortunately, I was sick. So all of these books are out now. You can go and pick them up. I think they are all on Amazon. And when we publish this episode on YouTube and podcast platforms, I'll make sure to link them so it's easy for you guys to find. But, Ash, do you want to read through the indie releases or would you want me to do it?
I'm happy to do so if you'd like.
Yes, please.
So this is also what we pulled or people we knew. So I pulled on mine. I said I put out a video and asked for a couple, and I think Brandon did the same. So if I mispronounce anybody's names, apologies, but I will do my best. So it's kind of a long list, and we'll just go through. First is Bound by Fate by Liv Moss. Second, The Smuggler's Deal by K.R. Solberg. Three, The Song of Thysia by S.J. Styles. Fourth, The Wrong Hookup by Cassidy Williams. Rising Phoenix by Shanna Robillard. Sorry. Hylia's Words by Robert Collins. The Wish Cycle, number four in The Wish Cycle by Laurel Levand. The Stone Project by Taylor Vaughn. And The Sea at the End of Everything by Emily McCosh. So those are out now. Go give them a shout out and put them in your TBR.
Yeah, lots of great indie releases. And if you have one that you would like us to spotlight, just let me know or let Ash know close to the release, preferably, so that we can time it and give you a good boost. And like I said, those links will be available on YouTube and whatever other platforms let me do it. So, and also, if I mispronounce anyone's name, please let me know. I'm not the best with name pronunciations. So, all right. Well, moving into indie publishing discussion, we have a few topics for you guys today. The first that I have on our list here is Audible and Brandon Sanderson have negotiated higher royalty rates for authors on Audible, and this does apply to independent authors as well. So hang on, let me find the right tab here. Okay, so for those of you who aren't familiar with Brandon Sanderson, he is a fantasy author known for his insane output. Definitely jealous of how fast this man can write. But yeah, he's been increasingly using his, I guess, fame to push for positive changes in the publishing industry. And I believe it was last year, but I might be wrong, it might have been 2022, where he came out with his four secret projects, and he made a decision to withhold them from Audible, kind of as like his negotiation tactic of negotiating higher royalty rates for authors across the board. If you're familiar with other entertainment industries, the way Audible's royalties work is not really in line with those other industries. It's fairly low in comparison. So his ultimate goal is to bring it close to that 70-30 split, which we see in like the games industry and the film industry and things like that. Ultimately, we're not there quite yet, but it's a good step. They haven't released the exact royalty rates yet. I think that's still forthcoming. But before I ramble endlessly on this topic, Ash, what are your thoughts on the increasing royalty rates and specifically how it affects you or other independent authors?
I definitely, this was new to me. I didn't realize that they only were paying like 25% in royalties, which just seems like insane. But I guess that's kind of what happens when you have like indie and self-publishing authors who are either like new to the whole situation of publishing or just don't have enough experience and knowledge. It feels like Audible is really taking advantage or working more with people who were already established and had connections to negotiate. It seemed really schemey. So I'm glad when I read this, I was really glad. It seems like towards the end, this article, he was not fully 100% happy, but really pleased with the kind of the breakdown that they came to him with. So regardless of what you think about Brandon Sanderson, I know he can be a little derisive, but I think that's pretty great that someone as big and world renowned as him, is kind of stepping up for the smaller guys like us. I am not a huge audiobook person. I do listen every now and then, especially for like a book club book when I need to be multitasking, but it feels good that going forward, indie authors will not be taken advantage of as much.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's really nice to see someone with such a big platform and such a large audience from trad publishing kind of specifically highlight how it affects independent authors, because you don't really see that very often. A lot of times I feel like there's kind of this divide between trad published authors and indie authors. A lot of like talking down to people. And things like that. So I'm just kind of surprised that he specifically mentions independent authors and like that he wants fair royalties across the board for everybody. Only good news on that front.
And also not like, we've only really touched on this a little bit, but I haven't really seen any other big authors chime in. And not to say that they haven't, I just haven't. When I was doing additional research on top of it, I haven't seen any other big major trad published authors jump on the bandwagon or just be like, support. I don't know. Maybe it gets, I'm not on Twitter or X, whatever. We'll just call it Twitter. So maybe it's been happening and I don't want to fault them for that. But yeah, I haven't seen enough, even on TikTok, of people being like, hey, for those who are doing Audible or are, you know, making their, turning their books into audiobooks. Here's the tea. So just good. Glad it's getting pushed out into the common world, I guess.
Yeah. Now that you mentioned it, I don't think I've seen many other people talk about it either. Especially on the trad publishing side, like not even just sharing the news, which is kind of strange, but
yeah, right. We don't like that. We need to see more of that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, our next topic. Sorry, what was that?
Sorry. No, I was like, before we jump in, does anyone in the chat have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, you could totally forget we have people watching.
No, that's okay. For the few people, are anyone have any opinions, real quick? We don't have to wait too long. Just didn't know if anyone had anything to say about it. No? All right. Well, moving on.
All right. Well, our next topic. This. I'm going to try to steer clear of the political debate around this topic as much as possible, please. this is not a politics podcast. It's, but I think it's important because TikTok is such a big part of especially our marketing and just a lot of independent authors as well. So with the recent passing of the TikTok ban bill, we'll call it, ultimately, it's not like going to immediately ban TikTok. The goal is to force ByteDance to divest their stake in the app, and if they don't, then the app is banned in the US. There's a lot of fine print and everything, you know, it's not black and white. There's concerns on both sides. But ultimately it is something important to be aware of, because especially if you use TikTok to promote your books. So I have a lot of thoughts on the topic, but I promise I won't just ramble endlessly, but I did want to, I lost my train of thought there. Hang on. Ash, while I catch up on what I was trying to say, what are your thoughts, on how this affects you and indie authors in general?
I think that's a big, okay. To narrow down my thoughts, I don't think a TikTok ban should occur, period, regardless of politics. I think apps and national security, period, is a different beast, an issue that we need to discuss and do whatever separately. I think, though, what we've found with TikTok, and especially the sub-communities and subgroups of TikTok, can be really powerful. I mean, now in Barnes & Noble, you have whole TikTok sections of books that have been popularized because, for better or worse, because of TikTok. So I think for us really small fry right now, banning it would just remove a huge source of outreach and marketing that we haven't previously seen before. When I went to the writing conference on Friday, the speaker made a point, you know, first it was Facebook, then it was, or first it was like LiveJournal, then it was Facebook, then it was Twitter, then it was Instagram, now it's TikTok. There will be something, hey Gray, there will be something that always kind of replaces the other, you know, as we
want
to be more social. So not to say that TikTok will last forever, but I think it'll take a huge chunk of our personal marketing, especially marketing we do for free, because maybe we can't afford marketing or getting people hyped for a project. So I hope they don't. I mean, regardless, if that's the case, we'll have to really connect as a community and share where you can meet us and see us in other spaces. But yeah, it would be a huge bummer. So those are my thoughts.
Okay. Real quick, I don't know if it's from your window or not, but I'm getting a little bit of wind feedback, so I didn't know if you wanted to. I just wanted to warn you ahead of time, just so I don't like not hear what you're saying.
No, that's okay. Let me know if that's better.
That's much better. That must have been what it is. Hopefully you are not, like, too hot now, though.
That's fine.
But no, I completely agree. I just don't think the ban is necessary, and even steering clear of the political discourse on the topic, I just don't agree with it. And I think there's national security concerns about quite literally every social media app out there. And I will say, I know we like to complain about like view jail and things like that on TikTok, but I have never had as much exposure as I do get on TikTok. I've tried YouTube in the past. That is that is a very difficult beast to tackle, but
The inner apps just don't translate well. Like, mm-hmm. even if you showcase your Instagram or have your Instagram linked in your profile, a lot of people don't like if I follow somebody and I really enjoy their content, I will definitely, but that's me personally. Most people just on the video will hit the ad and then move forward. And then stories don't get nearly as many views as regular posts. So yeah, there's no like translation. So, you know, as AB said, like there are also implications for small businesses, the ones that, you know, actually do the work, not just the scammers here on TikTok, but the small businesses. It's like, it's a huge loss.
Yeah, I definitely think that even if TikTok does go away, something will inevitably rise in its place. That's just kind of the nature of the market. If there's a void, someone's going to come along and fill it because there's money to be made.
Bring back Vine.
Before TikTok, there was Vine. And after TikTok, I'm sure there will be something else that my grandchildren use and I won't understand. But
what's that newfangled thing you got going on back in my day? It was TikTok.
But yeah, it's such a complex topic with a lot of opinions. But ultimately, I think if TikTok goes away, the number one app I'll be using in the meantime will probably be Instagram. If that is where I get the second most exposure. It's not nearly as much as TikTok, but also a lot of my active audience from TikTok is also active on Instagram. So
yeah, definitely.
There's kind of that familiarity there. But yeah, if this app does disappear, find me on Instagram and I will post more often there, and Ash too.
I'm so bad at posting. I'm like, I need to like have a consistent uploading schedule, which is what every self-help, you know, how to boost engagement says, but I'm also just like, no, I can't do that. I don't have the time or I just want to.
Understandable. When I started posting on TikTok, I went really hard at like a consistent schedule. I was doing 3 to 4 videos a day, even if they were just meme videos. And I definitely burned out from that. But yeah, so it's also hard to just come up with content that's like not boring to post frequently.
Yeah, like Kat just said, like posting without giving away spoilers and being consistent without giving away spoilers is really, really hard. Like you can only clear so many one-liners before you're like, okay, well this is like the whole plot. For sure.
And I just don't do face videos. I don't mind showing my face live. I have a weird thing about not having recorded versions of my face. So that also makes it harder to come up with content, if I'm being honest.
No, it really does. Also, I will say this is kind of nitpicky too. Like, it kind of goes back to the translation of one app's content to another. Like, making TikToks is kind of similar to making Instagram Reels, but they're just finicky enough on their own that I don't want to have to relearn, you know, or like learn how to do multiple. I don't know. It's just like, if they only made it easier. But anyway, that's super nitpicky.
My experience with like the TikTok clones, like YouTube Shorts and Instagram Reels, is that, I'm a web/app designer, so maybe I just pick up on this stuff more, but their functionality compared to TikTok is like, okay, hang on, let me back up a little bit. We talk about in web design and app development, minimum viable product, and it feels like they put out the minimum viable product, like the bare bones features, upload short videos and you can like and comment and that's it. TikTok has a lot more features, a lot more functionality, and I think it just performs better. It feels like they invested like into an MVP to compete with TikTok and then just never continued development of it, which is weird. Which is another reason I don't post Reels or Shorts or anything. I don't know. It's just my preference, but
totally agree with you. I think it just doesn't. It is like a copycat. It's like, you know, then stories became a thing and then Facebook, but even though it's Meta, whatever, like Facebook itself had then stories, which I never watched, but then now I'm only watching people's stories on Instagram and hardly scrolling down. Anyway, Social media, man.
Yeah, it's something. Okay, another thing, our next topic is ARC reviews on Amazon. So, Ash, I don't know if you've, since we've talked about it, if you've seen more of the claims. So basically the claim on BookTok is that Amazon is no longer allowing ARC reviews. From my own research, that isn't the case. If you go to Amazon's terms of service, it quite clearly has an exception outlined. Like, so it does say you're not allowed to review a product you received for free unless it was through this obscure program called Amazon Vine, which I've never heard of, by the way. But it does have an exception there underneath that says if you received an advanced reader copy, you are allowed to review that. So purely from like a legal perspective and things like that, if Amazon were changing their rules, they would update their terms of service. They're a billion-dollar corporation. They're not going to like sneak it up on you and then open themselves up to lawsuits or anything like that. And from what I could see, this is a claim that's gone back several years, actually. It just seems to surface and then disappear and then surface again and disappear for some reason. But it, so as I said, I work in software development, website or web and app design. If I just had to give an educated guess of what's happening with certain ARC reviews being removed, it's probably mistakenly flagging ARC reviews as the free product reviews that aren't allowed. Because right. there's, from a programming perspective, it's, I can already imagine like working on this and the headache that would be trying to differentiate the two to a code. So if you have had an ARC review removed, it's probably just a bug that they need to work out behind the scenes. But just rest assured that at least officially from Amazon, ARC reviews are still allowed. You can still post them. You can still ask for them as long as you're not like bribing people to make their ARC reviews positive and stuff like that. The rules are the same as they've always been. But yeah, I just wanted to clear up some misinformation on that front. But did you have anything to add to that?
I am not. I'm going to mute myself real quick. My boyfriend is playing Grand Theft Auto, and I need to tell him to turn it down.
No worries. I honestly can't even hear it, so.
Okay, glad you can't hear it. Still asked him to turn it down just in case.
Okay, no worries.
Yeah, I fully agree. I think that it's really easy on TikTok for floods of like misinformation to kind of get shared. And it's, I mean, for people who rely on ARC reviews for free marketing and publicity, it completely makes sense that that would be like, you know, you'd be scared if that was the case. I will read the exceptions underneath the compensated reviews on the community guidelines, just so everyone is very clear that this is the exception is... We allow reviews of free products received through the Amazon Vine program. We label these reviews with Vine customer review a free product, or it's okay to review a free or discounted book, advanced reader copy in parentheses, that you received from an author or publisher. However, they cannot require a review in exchange or try to influence the review, which I think is probably where people got mixed up. It's just like, if someone is literally bribing you.
Yes.
Review this book, or you give a bad review and they're like, we'll give you a $50 gift card if you delete it. That's where the issue comes in. I think, yeah, the fine print's always hard, but currently you can still ARC review on Amazon as long as you're not being bribed.
Yeah. Basically just ask for an honest review. Don't require it, and you should be fine. This definitely did scare me though when I read it, like when I first started seeing the news or the claims, because my debut's not even out yet, so I was like, oh, so I can't use ARC reviews, but
right,
definitely a relief to see that that's not the case.
Like
I'm not here, Kat, I'm definitely not here to defend the billion-dollar corporation or anything. I'm just I just like to I'm just not a fan of misinformation, and I know TikTok can be very prone to that with just short form content in general is. So definitely kind of want to use this as a platform to clear some of those things up when we can.
Yeah. Well, that's great.
Yeah. I think those are all our indie publishing and business-esque topics for the day. Next up, we have a few writing topics to discuss. Let's see. Oh, first is our work in progress check-in. Ash, how is work on A Filthy Hunger coming? And then this is also going to be your performance review for your Blaze for Hire story.
I think I actually have to go. I'll see you later.
It's okay. If I showed you my progress, I'd...
I'm not even going to lie. I don't know if anyone else feels the same way. I'm someone who works really well under pressure. And I myself, I know we'll probably talk about this too later on, but I'm really working on actively, but struggle with setting deadlines for myself. If someone sets a deadline for me, I'm perfectly fine, which is nice because you have set me a deadline. But I'm also like the, you know, the 13th hour kind of person, which I'm trying to not be. I've got the first couple thousand words for the anthology short story. I'm really excited about it. I started writing it and it started to flow and I was like, okay, this is going to be really good. I think mine is going to be a little on the longer end of other folks included in the anthology, but I think it'll be good. It'll be well-rounded and ready for beta by the end of April, I promise, but slow going. Also super slow going for A Filthy Hunger. Again, deadline set for myself. But when I pitched it this last weekend to a few agents, I got really good feedback. They were interested, which is always a boost of confidence that the story is worth telling and continuing. Not that I was thinking about stopping it, but you know, you kind of get into writing ruts and both you and I are full-time working in other jobs and we have friends and we have family and all this kind of stuff. So finding the balance is really challenging, but good news is I am... Kat, I sent her the teaser and she was like, but for A Filthy Hunger, we're coming along nicely. I've been stuck on chapter 7 for months, which seems crazy. I am not someone who can jump forward into like later chapters. I have to go linearly, as I was telling Kat. Chapter 7 is good. It feels much better than it's been. I was forcing my characters to do things that didn't fit their character at all, trying to make the plot happen to them rather than let them work through the plot. So in a much better spot. And I'm also getting back into writing my fan fiction. So those are all my writing updates.
Very cool. Actually, real quick before I steal your thunder, what is what fan fiction do you write? I don't know if I've...
it's Harry Potter fan fiction because shut up Kat, I will end you. It's Harry Potter fan fiction. I'm like a post Hogwarts Draco Malfoy Hermione girl. So
okay,
as silly as it seems, it is actually genuinely a very good writing exercise. Mm-hmm. I open that first, write about it, and then you know, get my chapter out, and then by that time I'm good to hop into that, the juice is flowing. So it's actually a genuinely good like writing practice. A little embarrassing because I'm almost 30 and you should be over Harry Potter. No, not so.
I still enjoy some Harry Potter, so
yeah, we all, especially on the holidays, to like rewatch the movies. Good stuff. Perfect. Anyway, enough about my really embarrassing fan fiction. What are you working on?
Actually, sorry, my internet's about to... no, I'm glad we're both kind of in the like slow but steady camp, because I would feel really awkward if you were like, yeah, I wrote 40,000 words this week, and I'm like, oh, I didn't write anything since Monday.
Same.
A Knight of Knives is coming along fine. Act 2 is such a struggle for me though, for some reason. I don't know why. What was that?
No, I was like, why is that? And then you're like, I don't know why. And I was like, oh, well, dang.
I don't know. It's just, I have it all planned out. I have the outline as much as I'm comfortable outlining. It's just the act of sitting down to write Act Two has been a challenge. I've been trying to pinpoint what the struggle is. I've tried editing like my outline, thinking maybe I was like bored and not invested, but that's not really the case either. We'll probably touch on this a little bit later, but I think it has to do with like the ADHD that I talked about. I'm very much a mood reader / writer, and it's difficult to force the writing to happen when it doesn't want to, which is something I'm trying to work on to a certain extent. Obviously, I don't want to always force myself into writing. You know, sometimes it's good to take a break, but there's also such thing for me as too much break and not getting anything done.
We are on the same wavelength because I'm like, oh, but then I look at the time not spent writing or working on any of the projects, and I'm like, okay, this is not well balanced. This is too much break, not enough working.
Yeah. And my Blades for Hire story is same, slow but surely. I'm hoping to meet the deadline that I set for everybody else. So that's coming along nicely. It'll be connected to A Night of Knives. It's kind of going to be like a prequel short story.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, I thought it would be kind of a nice
way. We have a couple of those, don't we? People who are like, oh, this is like a spinoff or like a novella type situation of like...
There's definitely some tie-ins to people's existing works, which is exciting. So.
Yeah.
And I have read... I don't know if you've read any of the betas. I think only a couple, maybe even like one or two have been posted, but they're very good. And
Bex uploaded hers, right?
Yeah, she finished hers really quickly.
I'm like, girl, holy cow.
Even being on the shorter end, it was really good though. I gave her some feedback. It was mostly just like surface level stuff, but I love her stuff. So
yeah, and great.
Well, on that topic, it was definite. Bex had a harder time to win me over just because her stuff isn't, no offense to Bex or anything, it's just not the stuff I would typically read, but I still love it. So,
good. Oh, good. I'm excited to read it. I'm excited to read everybody's, but hers in particular, I really, she's really good at the social media, like putting, like making videos for her own stuff. And I'm just, I admire her a lot for that. So I'm stoked to read everybody's, but hers in particular. Cause like 2 weeks after we were like, hey, Discord, she's like, I'm done. I was like, all right, girl, all right.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's hard being a mood reader. Yeah, I try to embrace it, but...
It's hard.
It is hard because sometimes I'm like halfway through a book and I'm like, I really don't feel like reading this today. I want to read this. My mind wants to finish. Like, I don't like leaving things unfinished, so...
No, I feel like... You know, maybe this goes into like something else and we can flow past it. But like a lot of what I see videos on here, like, oh, I forced myself to finish this book and here's my like 2-star rating, whatever. I'm very much a proponent of DNFing a book. If you are finding it really challenging. Also, Kat, yes, like if you're in a weird time in your life where you're reading for school or for work and you genuinely don't want to read anything else, I mean, that is okay. DNFing is okay. Pausing a book. I love Brandon Sanderson, but I had to pause Mistborn because I was like, I need something stupid and easy to read right now. I can't be doing like alchemical metal math in my head at the moment. So I feel like that we need to push like knowing when you're reading and when you want to read and what you want to read and if it's not working for you is really important because we see these videos of like people being like, I read 22 books this month. And I'm like, I read a quarter of one book that I've had on my shelf for a really long time. And that still counts. That still counts.
Yeah, definitely also a proponent of DNFing if you're not enjoying something. Mm-hmm. More often than not, that's not really my problem. It's just the mood reading issue, but I definitely do have to remind myself that it's okay to DNF sometimes. There's just something satisfying about finishing something, even if I didn't like it. I don't know what it is, but
For sure. I very rarely DNF, but I've never been afraid to be like,
yeah,
not my thing. I mean, I did have to DNF one of the ARC reviews I did recently because I was just like, this isn't, I feel so bad because it was my most looked forward to book of the new year. And I was like, this is just, yeah, it's, especially if you are a mood reader, because you're like, you know, you can set it aside, but sometimes even if you are a mood reader, it's just not hitting and you know it's never going to hit. So, yeah. Yeah, it's hard to distinguish.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we gave you guys an update on our works in progress. They'll probably be, you'll probably get the same update next week.
No, Brandon, we'll have updates next week. What updates?
You might. I'm not so optimistic, but...
Me? We can skip next week. But we'll just be like, no news.
Technical difficulties.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, we have some weekly writing topics to go over with you guys today. Just fun little introductory writing topics that I thought get them out of the way in the first episode because this is what you guys are going to ask for most. The first one I have is sources of inspiration. I feel like this is the first question everyone asks any creative that they want to know more about. Ash, let's start with you so I can sneakily formulate my thoughts in the background. What inspires you to create or to got you into like writing, for example?
It's a very broad question, and I know it's kind of hard to answer succinctly. I have always been a reader. My parents did a really excellent job for all of their mistakes at teaching me to read really early, which I am so grateful for. And very early on, it was fantasy that always tended to be what was read to me or what I read, you know, C.S. Lewis, Harry Potter, back when they were coming out. And so I really enjoyed and found myself as a kid easily immersed in stories in ways that it seemed some of my peers weren't, some were. But I just became very obsessed with storytelling. And as I got older, the folklore concept of storytelling, of in fantasy, yeah, I was there when it was written. Yeah, like the folklore aspect of where these stories come from. And even though we keep telling the same stories kind of culturally across cultures, seeing them done in new ways is so fascinating and essential to humans. So that has really driven me to, as an adult, step forward and be like, I'm going to try and make this happen. I'm really trying to just like have this story that I've had in my head for a very long time since high school, which is insane, like over 10 years ago, like putting it to life. So my inspiration came from my authors, like Holly Black, when I was in middle school. She kind of shot me into fae and folklore and all that kind of stuff. Same with C.S. Lewis, peace again. And, you know, like J.R.R. Tolkien and all the big guys. But it was really not until I became an adult that I was like, I'm gonna just do this for myself. So I think that's what inspires me, is not necessarily anyone else, but rather like I've just had the story in me and I think it's important to be told. I've also written my whole life just for fun. My dad was really encouraging of it. So yeah, that's kind of the simplified, long-winded answer of what inspires me slash who. So your turn.
Yeah, well, I'm just going to copy and paste some of what you said. Very similar story to you. Just I grew up in a environment that encouraged sharing stories and consuming them. Like I have 7 siblings, so I was introduced to a lot of stories from them and my mom ran a daycare when I was a kid, so I had a pretty close in age friend group that we all kind of, they were the ones who introduced me to like Lord of the Rings and Star Wars and Harry Potter and things like that.
That's so interesting.
So really,
wait, okay, I don't mean to interrupt.
Yeah.
Where do you, on the sibling, like where are you, old, young, middle?
Dead in the middle at almost 25, so.
All right, well, there you go. Just had to know.
Dead in the middle, which is a blessing and a curse.
It's like middle child syndrome.
Yep.
To the extreme. No, just kidding.
But yeah, no, just like you, I've been reading and watching stories pretty much my entire life, and they've all impacted me in some way. So naturally, I've just kind of wanted to do the same thing. I want to create stories that make people feel how they make me feel. I want to use them to explore topics that I think are kind of lesser explored in storytelling.
Give an example. That's really interesting. Like, what do you?
So
yeah.
Kind of, maybe I'll save that for a later episode, just so I can not sound like an idiot when I'm talking about it.
But, sure, totally. Well, make a note then, because I won't forget.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, no, for sure. I definitely would love to touch on that. I think I need to process my thoughts and present it in a clear way, because I will definitely trip over my words if I try to talk about it right
worries.
Now. But, we talked about him already, but one of my biggest inspirations is George R. R. Martin, just because I read him at a very difficult time in life, and it was also a time where I was kind of becoming disillusioned with storytelling in general, and it kind of just showed me stories can be different, if that makes sense. Like, I didn't read anything like Game of Thrones until I read Game of Thrones. So it kind of reinvigorated my love for fantasy in particular, because I was kind of getting tired of it by that point. And then there's a bunch of other authors, like J.K. Rowling growing up, and all those people that I hope to emulate in some way. I'm tripping over my words again here, but to create stories that make people feel the way those stories made me feel growing up. That's ultimately my goal. So to answer the question, my inspiration is I just want to tell stories that people like and they can relate to. I think that's what a lot of authors want, so I'm no different in that regard.
Agreed. Well, great. That's a good answer. It's perfectly fine.
Well, I'm glad you think so. I don't know why I feel like I could have tied this into inspiration, but I was trying to go in a different direction with this. Motivation.
Okay.
That's our next topic. Mm. But specifically, what I meant by motivation was, and I guess we touched on this a little bit, how do you keep the motivation to create when it gets hard, I guess? We've kind of talked about the struggles of writing and being like a mood reader and a mood writer already, but it's definitely a long process that requires persistence. So how do you keep yourself from getting discouraged, or just how do you stay motivated to create?
Yeah, it's a really good question. Especially with when you're feeling like not feeling motivated. And I think my initial answer off the cuff is I feel like I would do a disservice to my characters who have in of themselves become these people that I'm like, oh shit, I need to get your story out somehow. So they motivate me in this weird kind of like psychological way to be like, even if it's been a month, like a dry spell, it's like they're still there in the background. I mean, I think about them every day. Appearance by dog. Hello. So that's, I think, like my number one internal motivator. I've never really talked about that before, but they are very persistent and kind of just always there. Another motivation is just, I've said to everybody that I'm going to do this, and so I have to do it. I kind of did the same thing with before I got injured, I was like training for a marathon, and my coworker was like, do you want to train for a marathon? And I was like, sure. Yes, I'll try. So it's more of just like, I've said I'm going to do it. I've told other people that I'm going to do it. So when I'm feeling really low or like not motivated, I'm like, oh, I have like people who are genuinely rooting for me. And if I say I'm going to do it and then never deliver, I've done them a disservice by being my friend and being my support system, or being family members, by not giving back to them what I said I'm going to do. So I think those are the two biggest.
Yeah, I think those are great. Definitely good motivators to keep you going, especially when you have people that you've told, I'm writing a book, and then they keep asking you for updates.
How is it? I'm like, well, I'm still on chapter 7, and it's been 2 months. That's fine. Yeah, for sure.
But how about you? Great answer. For me, it's pretty similar. Like, it's a little bit of those things, and then it's kind of... One is a recognition that no one's going to write the story for me, so I want it to be told, and ultimately only I can tell it. So that's not like an arrogant thing, by the way. I just mean it's my story, so no one else knows to...
Literally.
It's in my head, so I have to get it out. But that's really it. Just, it's my story, so I have to get it out. Mm-hmm. And if it's not something that I think is worth telling, then I'll switch to another project. But to me, these are stories worth telling, and I think provide somewhat of a unique perspective, and I want to share that. So just kind of reminding myself that, like, you're the only person who's going to get it done, and you're the only person with this, like, perspective. Not an arrogance thing, just like,
it's true. I mean, you can give someone the same prompt. Mm-hmm. You can give them, like, for example, you could give them the parameters of your story, right, that you, Brandon, are writing. And you could even give them a loose plot line, the exact same plot, and they're going to write very different stories with different elements. So it's like, yeah, of course that's like a huge motivator, because only you can write yours, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think that's good enough for sure.
Yeah, that's pretty much the sum of... I still struggle with motivation, so I don't have like a long answer for this, but...
Please see work updates from earlier in this podcast.
Yeah. Accountability partners are also great resources. Yeah, for sure. I think BookTok has been really helpful in that regard. For me, at least, just having a nice community of other writers to talk to and relate to.
Yeah. I'm also, honestly, Brandon, kind of surprised that you are not, like, you struggle with motivation, because, like, you created the anthology, you made up this podcast, like, you seem to be very on it, and I'm not dismissing the fact that, obviously, we're on the same page with motivation, but I think you do a pretty good job of, like, setting deadlines and getting everyone involved, so gonna give you your laurels for that
one. Well, thank you, I appreciate it. That's kind of one of... So having like really bad ADHD comes with positives and negatives. One of the positives is when I get excited about a project. Sorry, one sec. I just got a warning from TikTok that said your live will end in 5 minutes, but I think I resolved it. It said we detected inactivity, and it asked me to like verify activity. So we should be good. I don't know
TikTok.
What.
Trying to silence us?
I mean, I don't think we've stopped talking for the past hour, so I don't know what inactivity you're talking about. But.
I have no idea. All good, we're here. And if we go dark, we'll just reboot again.
Yeah, for sure. The benefits and the downsides of ADHD is when I get excited about a project, particularly a new project, I can... like really go all in on it. It's just kind of, it's usually the middle part of whatever project that's the struggle, because then when you're close to the end, then there's also that like build up of excitement, like, oh, I can see the finish line.
You're right,
but yeah, definitely pros and cons to having severe unmedicated ADHD.
You're doing just fine, in my opinion.
All right, well, on to our next topic, unless you want to interrupt me if you have something else to add to motivation. But this was one, I think, that you suggested on when you signed up to join the podcast, was negative feedback. Like, how does that affect you, and do you even look at it? I know some people don't. I think you and I might have it might be a little difficult for us to talk about because we're both working on our debuts, but I'm sure we both have like people we share in progress work with, and kind of just a general mindset going into our debuts of what our approach is going to be. So
yeah.
I'm curious to hear from you. How do you handle negative feedback now, and what is kind of your plan when your debut releases?
Yeah, so I brought this topic up in our plan because I've seen a lot of videos going around, and this is where the idea stemmed from, as I said, of indie authors looking at their negative reviews, or just the reviews in general, and then specifically looking at their negative reviews. And I'm definitely, like, I know Kat and I have talked about this constantly. Like, we talk about it almost every time we get together. But some people are for and some people are against. I say if you're an indie self-published author, you've gone through the process of beta reading, alpha reading, and then you kind of send it to an editor. So by the time that it's published, it's pretty much as well-rounded, unless you skip some of those steps, which is fine if you do. But if you don't and you go through each process, by the time it hits like Amazon or wherever you publish, I think the negative review side is not necessary to look at. I feel like if you do beta, alpha, editor, you're already getting the feedback of what you can improve on, or especially, which I think now people should include like diversity reads to make sure like we're, you know, you're good and you're not messing up in any essential important way. By that time, it's the reviews are for readers, right? Like they're not for authors. You don't need to do that. Some people do read them though, because they're like, oh, I don't know how I would improve to the general public if I don't know. So my opinion with that background is that you shouldn't read negative reviews unless you specifically are asking individuals or small groups of people for their feedback. I kind of had to go through that myself recently. I am a very private person when it comes to my personal life with my family, specifically my parents. And it was kind of a peace offering to them to show them my first couple of chapters of, because there are a lot of like overt like negative religious themes in my novel, that they are very religious people, so I didn't know how that would be received. So last week my mom got on with me and went through the first few pages and gave me her feedback, and it was such a relief to get negative feedback from, and it wasn't bad feedback, it was like very positive, but it was also like, I didn't like this. You should change this. This is not good. And then my dad sent me his like very edited first chapter review, and it felt uncomfortable. It's not comfortable. They're not supposed to be comfortable. It's negative for that reason, right? These are ways you can improve. You yourself can't produce the most perfect thing ever. Like even the best of the best have gone through revision after revision. I think my favorite quote is like from Neil Gaiman when he was like, someone asked him, when you get the final edit of the book, how does it compare to the initial, like when you send the first draft? And he's like, they look nothing alike. So I think negative reviews and negative feedback from people that you choose or are essential in the process is important, and the most important. Negative reviews from the public, do not search it out, and I think serve very little purpose for you as a writer and your craft. So, but yeah, like Kat said, like there's critical bad feedback, you know, and then there's not. And I think depending on who you're giving it to, it can be really beneficial. But don't go on Amazon and look at negative reviews if you're the author.
yeah, for sure. No, I totally understand. I don't know personally if I'm going to have the self-control to not read negative reviews. That is a big part of it. But also, I can understand like different opinions on this topic. So some people, I think some people are better at receiving feedback and kind of being able to filter it than others. It's definitely kind of like a learned skill, because you kind of, when someone's reviewing your work, they're not always good at saying what they're trying to say, if that makes sense.
That's true too. Absolutely.
So I like to relate writing to my day job, web design, just because they're both creative industries and there's a lot of parallels. Working in web design, feedback is just a part of my everyday like workflow, and I have to take it into consideration. So a lot of the people I work with, they don't have the knowledge of user experience and web design and programming and things like that. So when they give me feedback, I kind of have to take it, process it, and think, okay, this is what they're saying, but what are they, ultimately, what are they trying to convey? Like, they say, I don't like this. I have to know what questions to follow that up with, how to take that and implement it. And then there's also having to know when to push back in web design. Now, I don't know if that applies to writing as much, but sometimes in web design, you do have to push back because people will ask for bad practices. There are certain industry standards that you adhere to create good user experiences, and not everyone knows what those are. But so
I also want to interrupt because I think your, like what you just said is really applicable though, right? Like, it's like my parents who don't really read fantasy giving their feedback is like, great. Okay. How do I translate that into something that I am like, okay, that's actually genuinely good. Or nope, this is going to be kept. You know what I mean? Yeah. Because you are aware of your own industry. So just want to step in because I agree.
Yeah, for sure. I think you definitely have to know what your intent is first and foremost. Like, if you have to know what you're setting out to create, because ultimately you can't please everybody. Everyone's going to get negative feedback. So you have to know if someone gives feedback that it might not be their taste, but it is what you were going for. You just have to know how to, like, how to filter the feedback into, okay, this is helpful, this is useful, I'm going to take this and let it inform my writing or whatever creative work you're working on. You have to be able to filter, like, okay, that's just not that person's taste. And then there is just some genuinely bad feedback that people will give. And so you have to know how to filter that as well. It's definitely something you learn, and working in any creative industry, you will probably pick up on it. So I think that's kind of my approach. Like, I know I'm not going to have the self-control to not read the Amazon reviews. I can already tell you that. Now, that said, I'm not going to, like, read an Amazon review and then be like, oh, shit, I need to pull my book down and edit it and change
this. Or go attack the reviewer, right?
Which I think or that at all.
What happens. Like, We don't have to get into that. It's like,
I'm not going to interact with the reviews. Like, I see no need to respond to them because, like you said, they're for readers. They're not for me by that point. And ultimately, working in web design, I've just had to kind of grow thick skin to a certain extent and just be like, okay, like, we disagree and that's fine. You don't like this. That's fine. And I think if you're working in a creative industry, you definitely need to have thick skin. You need to accept that you can't go on the offensive when people don't like your stuff.
Like, there's going to be criticism in every step of the process. And I think that's what, like, a lot of people, and I don't know, I'm just assuming, and I don't want to put any words in people's mouths, but, like, I feel like what I see a lot, especially in the self-publishing indie space on TikTok and on here, is that there's an excitement to tell your story, and it is exciting. It is essential to humanities to continue to tell stories. But for all the positive comments that they get, or for all the super stoked and excited, I've often see one negative comment will get picked out and then a reply video will be published of like, well, you don't understand. And I understand the defensiveness, but, like, I think as Kat said, like, your work is not going to be everyone's cup of tea, right? Like, some of the best have haters. It's like, that's just kind of a part of the space that you're in, especially when you're putting literal words on paper and then giving them to the public. And I think, like, that kind of gets lost, or there's not enough, like, just be prepared and it's okay. Like, just because you get negative reviews or feedback doesn't make you a bad writer. And it also doesn't mean you should stop. Like, as Kat said, having haters means you've made it. But Yeah, I don't think, going off of your point, I think I probably will read one or two. I'm not going to lie. It's the curiosity of, like, what did you hate about it? Like, I want to know. But at the end of the day, like you said, it's just not going to change the book. It's not going to change your story. And like any good debate, in my opinion, if I can use that as an example, when you're in a debate, when someone is critiquing your thought or your belief system, it either reinforces that belief system because you're like, nope, like I can defend this. I can, you know, this is what I believe in truly. Or you notice the gaps in your thinking and you say, great, that's something I can improve upon or dive deeper into or work on next time. It's just such a great thing to experience, even though the word negative has a bad connotation, you know? Yeah, it's important.
Yeah, for sure. I think when it comes to indie publishing too, since the barrier to entry is so low, there's not like that, you don't have to be experienced with feedback and taking it in and responding to it appropriately. Whereas in like a trad publishing space, you're probably getting more like brutalized by your editor than any Amazon review. So by the time that goes out... And that's no shade to indie publishing, by the way, as someone who's going to be an indie publisher.
I literally follow an Instagram that's like 1-star Goodreads reviews because they're so funny. And like most of the time they're just kind of like ridiculous. Anyway, I think it's good. Yeah.
Sometimes it's fun to read those. But yeah. Also, I see some, you love 1-star reviews. Yeah. I feel like I'd rather read a 1-star review of my book than like a 3-star review that's like, it's okay. I don't know.
Yeah. Either have a strong opinion or have none at all, you know?
Yeah.
No, I have opinions, but it's either a 5-star or a 1-star, you know what I mean? Yep.
The love interest wears skinny jeans. I'm not sure where that's from. I'm reading the chat.
Oh, what good review is that from, Kat? Is that from Fourth Wing? Probably. I feel like I saw that somewhere. It was like, yeah. It was Fourth Wing. I don't know if you've seen that popular romanticism.
Is that a thing he wears? Or is that just like a joke that that goes over
it's
my head
because like
I haven't read the book? Okay.
I haven't read like Fourth Wing. You don't need to. It's, in my opinion, unnecessary as someone who has read it. But one of the 1-star reviews are the love interest wears skinny jeans. It's just like, picture someone, like picture a grown man who wears skinny jeans. and it's very silly. Yeah. So yeah, that was funny. Yeah, very good.
Well, our next and our last writing topic kind of ties into the other ones we've talked about. It's just imposter syndrome. I have two questions. One, does it affect you? And two, how do you cope with it?
Next time we do this, I'm going to ask the questions first.
That's okay.
So that you have to answer first. Because I'm being put on the spot. No, I'm just kidding. beforehand, so I knew what I was going to say. It does affect me. It affects me literally every day. I think it is really impossible to not have imposter syndrome in this day and age of social media and talk therapy session for sure. Because when you see someone traveling, you know, or you see someone succeeding in ways that you wish you could, or their quick success, even just like seeing how many people read 15, 20 books a month, there's just always a comparison happening. And I don't think any of us are immune to it. I experience it very frequently. It often impedes my writing because some days I'll have a good writing session, some days I won't. And on those bad writing session days, I am extremely like, I shouldn't be here. I'm making this up. Who thought that I should be one to eat 20 croissants, go cry in bed for a second, you know? Michael, does it affect you or do you think it affects me? I think so. I mean, if I have like a bad imposter syndrome day, I will like not write or not post anything about my work for a while just because I feel like it's not worth it. It is something I'm working on, therapy, but also the constant comparison to other people on on the apps, people that I have books on my bookshelf with. It is a constant, but going back to the motivation aspect, eventually I convince myself through either my characters needing their story to be told or the fact that I've said I'm going to do the damn thing that I have to just push on and, you know, regardless of how I feel, the words have to get written. So that usually gets me out of it. And friends and family help too. So
yeah. Sorry, is my audio working still?
Yeah.
Okay, I just had a weird glitch with my headphones, so I didn't know if my mic or my headphones went on or something. But no, yeah, totally agree. I think I definitely suffer from it on a daily basis, even in my day job, which I've been working at for years. I still am like, I suck at this. I'm going to be fired tomorrow.
Right.
So it's weird because I've never gotten that indication from my day job. Like, no one's ever even hinted that I'm doing a bad job. It's still there and it's never going to go away.
Yeah.
So I've just kind of learned to sometimes ignore it, I think, and push through and kind of let the results speak for themselves, at least when it comes to my day job. And I'm trying to take that same approach to writing. Another thing that helps is looking at the authors that I talked about as my inspirations and the people that wrote the stories I liked growing up, just simply looking at where they started. Not to say I'm going to attain their level of success by any means, but just to know they started in a very like low point as well, like working a day job, writing in their spare time, no one knew who they were, doubting themselves the whole time. So that helps me. I know it doesn't help everybody, but that's just something I find oddly comforting, to know that even the most successful people have, if I do end up famous, remember, absolutely, definitely will. That's just my very short thoughts on imposter syndrome, and kind of what I do to deal with it.
You said something really that kind of clicked for me, and I haven't really heard before, of like, the results will speak for themselves. And I think that's really important. It's like, if you remove your own self-doubt and you remove whatever, you know, self-conscious impediments to your writing, and then you present it, that in of itself is a representation of you, and you have to let those, like you said, speak for yourself or speak for themselves. So I think that's a really good lesson to be learned, is that like, yeah, you might have the doubt, but once that book is in front of you, that's your book, baby.
Yeah.
And it is. It's accumulation of everything. So that's really good, good to remember.
Sure. Well, I think that's all our writing topics. Something that we want to do, I think, every week is share a useful resource for you guys that we've found helpful. So Ash and I both have a resource that we're going to share here. Ash, I know I've been making you go first this entire time.
No, you're fine.
Do you,
I don't mind.
Would you like to share your resource first, or would you like me to go first? I will put that in your hands this time.
I will go first. That is totally. I'm also just giving you flack.
But no, for real. I didn't want to be like putting you on the spot the whole time.
Okay. I genuinely like read over this multiple times today, so I was like, I'm prepared, but no, I'm just teasing.
Okay.
Yes, I can go first. So this week's writing resource from me is Grammar Girl, which is quick and dirty tips on grammar if you struggle like me. I'm pretty good at grammar, but often fall very flat. So a little bit of background about the resource is that it was created by Megan Fogarty in 2006 and then became a book in 2008. A really cool thing, because back in the early 2000s, like, podcasts were still kind of like new and up and coming, but the listenership of this particular podcast back in the day was split 50-50 between women and men, which you don't really see very often, especially like with the amount of podcasts we have nowadays. So I just thought it was really cool. And by like the end of the year in 2007, remember it started in 2006, it had 7 million downloads, which is really cool. So one of the best things about this resource is that every week, listeners submit their grammar questions, and a big chunk of the podcast is them responding to listener questions, which made me feel less alone when I started to listen to it, when I was researching it, because I was like, okay, well, like, I thought that too, and I have that question also. It's not these experts just talking and wax poeticing about all this stuff. So yeah, that's why I really like the podcast. It reinforces rules that I knew / taught me a few things that I didn't know. The episodes are short. They're like less than 20 minutes per episode. So if you want to just like quickly go through a few, the topics are usually in the header or like in the description of what they talk about. I think it's a great resource for indie and independent authors, editors as well, because if you either don't have a degree, not that you need one, that's not necessary, but if you want to make sure that you're up to snuff on what the current, you know, the current rules are on grammar and things like that, or you just need a quick little like re-up on knowledge, it is a really good resource. I can't put it in here right now, but I think we're probably going to link it if we share this somewhere else. So yeah, Grammar Girl, go check it out.
Yeah, very cool. When I was reading your little write-up on it, it definitely made a note to come back to it, especially when I'm in the editing phase, because I know I'm going to need a good amount of reminders. Google Docs and, you know, spell check can only do so much for you. So
exactly, 100%.
But yeah, thanks for sharing that. My resource isn't as, I don't really think it's as cool, but it's a book that I had to read in high school, and it is the only book, or okay, I'll say one of two books that I had to read in high school that I actually enjoyed.
Really? Okay, all right. Well, give it to us.
Yeah, so it's called On Writing Well by William Sincer. It was first published in 1976, and since then it's sold 1.5 million copies to three generations of writers. It was written by a writer / editor / literary critic, and he was also a teacher, so man of many talents there. But it's primarily geared towards nonfiction writing, which I know most of us are fiction writers, but I still use the advice there in my fiction writing a lot. If you're someone who struggles with like trimming the fat of your writing, this book is really helpful with that. It's really short too. I think it's not even 200 pages, but it's really, really informative, and it really helped me in my writing to be more clear and not fluff things up. And it's definitely really helpful for when it comes to like things like editing and knowing when you need to cut stuff, because I feel like, especially for me, before I read this, that could be really difficult, knowing what you need to remove and what's safe to remove.
It's my biggest issue.
Yeah,
I have so much to trim.
Yeah, and you get attached to your writing, so it's really hard to like trim it down. You're like, but I like that sentence, and I don't want to cut a thousand words out of this chapter.
But you have a graveyard. You like a sentence, you put it in a graveyard.
That's a good idea. I should definitely do that. My words just get thrown into the void, and I forget what I wrote, which is...
You always keep what you delete. Seriously, it's a huge... Yeah, anyway, not to interrupt, but Graveyard.
No, I mean, I was pretty much done explaining it anyway. It's a pretty cheap book. You can get on Amazon, short read, and I actually keep my high school copy on my shelf, where it's easy to access when I need to remind myself how to edit and not use too many words.
Yeah. No, that's great. I think that is definitely one I need to read, because I'm very, I like to embellish.
Yeah.
It's like one thing, it's trimming the fat, gotta just cut it back. But no, that's super cool. I've never heard of it, so it's great resource.
Like I said, it's geared mostly towards nonfiction, but I find it helpful even in writing fiction. So as long as you can kind of approach it knowing that it was written for nonfiction writers and tweak it a little bit, I think it's a great resource.
Sounds great.
I think that's all our writing topics and all our resources. So, Ash, did you have anything you wanted to share on any of the topics we talked about before we move into like the open questions?
I don't think so. I don't have anything. Nope.
Okay, cool. Nothing for me. Well, now is, I know you guys have been interacting throughout the show, but now is the time for, if you have feedback or questions, comments, anything to share, topic suggestions, literally anything. If you want to know what I had for breakfast this morning, it was nothing, so don't ask. but yeah, the floor is Chet's, so you guys can ask any questions or whatever.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things about this podcast is we really want to incorporate is making sure that the topics that the people want to talk about are being kind of discussed in a very open forum. I know it's easy to get caught up in everything, especially on TikTok, but hopefully we become a place that you're like, I have a question I would like answered, and we can do the research for you and come back with a response. Oh, Brandon, how many stories are in the anthology?
I saw that question. I actually had to double check because, so I believe the number is 15, because it was going to be 16 and someone had to drop out before I made the Discord. So it might be 16. I might be forgetting someone, but I'm pretty sure it's 15.
Pretty solid. Pretty solid number. What's the, I'll ask my own question. What's the spread between short, medium, and long form through the anthology?
So there's a few people who, like, they just don't know. They're just going to write what they feel, and it's going to end up being as long as it is, which is totally fine. I know there's a good amount of us on the longer end, like at least four or five. Mm-hmm. I know you, me, our resident pirate captain, SM Campbell, and then I forget who else has a long story, but I know there's at least four of us in that channel. There's about the same number, maybe three or four, that have said their story's going to be on the shorter end. It'll probably, like Cass said, it'll probably be a thick book. Definitely.
I think it's good for that.
Yeah, for sure. And I think having the variety is nice too, because if they were all the same length, it just gets boring. But we have a nice variety of length and a nice team of talented authors, all with their own unique perspectives. So there's going to be a nice mix of stories. I don't think you'll get too much of the same thing, but they're all going to be on theme, of course. So
yes, on theme. I think we have, not to tease anyone's prematurely, but one that involves squirrels, which is always fun. Comic relief in between the probably darker themed, like mine, tend to be a little bit more like that. But I'm super stoked because I think it'll be, like you said, like a good even spread of short, medium, and long, and got some lighthearted thrown in with a little darker. So it'll be good.
Yeah, nice variety. I'm definitely super excited to read everyone's stories.
Yeah, too. Well, no one else has any questions or comments or concerns. Kat, I know. We're aware. Okay. No, I like to... Yeah, I know. We don't have to talk about it. I think the only thing that I have is that I will probably post between now and then asking again for any up-and-coming releases from people or people that they know. And also... again, encouraging people to give us themes and topics to discuss. As much as Brandon and I enjoy coming up with our own content and, you know, putting it together, I think that's the crux of this whole podcast, because it's so indie self-publishing based, is that if you have any questions, we will do the research. We will look into things for everybody, even if we don't come up with a solid, like, yes or no answer or whatever, happy to do it. We want this to be very community-based, so I'll ask for questions over the coming week, and we'll put it together.
Yeah, for sure. Now that we've covered, I think, the initial questions that were inevitable, like inspiration and things like that, definitely give us the topics you want to hear us talk about, and whatever... Ash said it all. My brain's fried today. Sorry.
It's a long day.
it's been a long day, and tomorrow's going to be a long day too. But thank you to everyone who joined us for our first episode. Hopefully when I watch this recording back, it works and there's no major issues. And I will have it uploaded to YouTube and all major podcast platforms like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and wherever else you listen to a podcast. Hopefully by the end of the week, kind of a busy week, but my goal is Friday. But I'll definitely make a post when it goes up. And in the meantime, if there's any ideas or feedback you guys have, you know my TikTok, just leave a comment.
Yep. All right. Well, great, Brandon. Great first podcast. I think this is good. We're literally right on time. We said an hour and a half, I think. And
you predicted it too. I couldn't even guess. So great estimate there. You will definitely be the one to guess how long they are going forward.
It's all good. I think this is an hour and a half seems great, especially after a long Monday, Tuesday. I think it's good. It's perfect.
Yep. Well, thanks to everyone for joining us. Thank you, Ash, for hosting this with me.
Thanks for creating it.
Yeah, anytime. Did you have anything else you wanted to share before we sign off?
That's it. Thanks to everybody who commented and was interacting, and we will see you next week.
All right. Bye, Ash, and bye, everybody else.
Bye, everyone. Bye, Brandon. See ya.